Welcome to the RWE conference call. Markus Kreber, CFO of RWE AG, will inform you about the developments in the first three quarters of 2016. I will now hand over to Gunhild Greef.
Thank you. Good morning to everyone on the phone and to those who are joining us via webcast. This is the first time the new RWE, so RWE after the Innogy IPO, is reporting its quarterly numbers. Although I'm sure that I've met most of you several times during my 8 years with the company, it's the first time in my new role as Head of Investor Relations. I'm looking forward to working on the new equity story, and I'm convinced that this part of the business has a great future, although the environment is still very tough. I'm joined here by Markus Kreber, who became a board member of RWE on 1st October and CFO on 15th of October. I believe some of you know him already from his function as the CEO and formerly CFO of our trading activities. Before I hand over to Markus, I would like to make a short comment on the reporting structure for Q1 to Q3. Because the IPO of Innogy took place in Q4, the interim statement of the RWE Group for the first 9 months, 2016, is still under the old reporting structure. The outlook, however, is given according to the new structure, where Innogy will be reported under a single line. As Bernhard already reported all the details of Innogy's financials last Friday, we will not cover Innogy's business segments in detail. And with this, I hand over to Markus.
Thank you, Gunhild, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. As Gunhild mentioned, I have already had the opportunity to meet with some of you over the last few years in my previous role. Now I'm very much looking forward to working with you in my new capacity as CFO of RWE. That being said, let's go straight into the highlights of our presentation on page 3. Here I want to start by mentioning the successful listing of Innogy at the beginning of October. In addition to Innogy's 10% primary component, RWE additionally placed some 73.4 million shares from our holding at the same time and received roughly 2.6 billion euros. This provides us with a solid liquidity position and increases our financial flexibility for upcoming funding requirements. With the IPO of Innogy, life as two independent companies became a reality. The corporate governance of RWE and Innogy is clearly defined and separated, and the operational management of RWE was seamlessly taken over by the new team. Our operational performance in the first three quarters of the year developed as expected. I will come to the details in a minute. We can also confirm the outlook for the group for this year's main earnings figures. Finally, the government has published a draft law on the transfer of financing and duties of the disposal of nuclear waste. They were largely in line with our expectations. However, we still need to clarify some key aspects of the framework. At this point, we will also be able to finalize our funding consideration. More about our current thinking on this topic in a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, slide 4 shows the structure of the new RWE. Before I come to the numbers of the first 9 months, let me highlight the following. The new RWE will concentrate on the operational management on conventional power generation and trading gas midstream. According to the agreement of basic principles between Innogy and RWE, we will manage our participation as a pure financial asset. This guarantees the independence of Innogy, which is not only in their but also our best interest. Nevertheless, I should point out that we will continue to fully consolidate Innogy as a majority holding in our group accounts. Let us now have a closer look at the numbers for the first 9 months. On slide 5, you see the divisional operating results. Gunhild mentioned already that the new RWE structure is not yet reflected in the 9 months report, as the IPO took place in Q4. As Bernhard already provided all the facts for Innogy at the end of last week, let me focus on RWE's two operational divisions. Here we see a mixed picture in the earnings trend. Operational result for conventional power generation was slightly better than in the same period 2015. We saw operational improvements from our efficiency program, positive one-off effects from the sale of land in the UK, and compensation payments in the context of our Hamm power plant. These effects overcompensated lower realized generation margins, mainly in our lignite and nuclear generation fleet. Margins in our hard coal and gas power station were more stable and in some cases even improved. Trading gas midstream still shows a strong decline year on year. Also, we had a positive operation result in Q3. This was not enough to offset the trading loss we made in Q2. Slide 6 shows the reconciliation of earnings down to adjusted net income. Let me point out the following here. The net income for the first 9 months is affected by negative one-off effects, which were already partly explained in H1. First, the non-operating result is significantly negative and down year on year. This is mainly due to timing effects from asymmetrical accounting for derivatives, which we use to hedge against price volatility. As you might remember, these derivatives are accounted for at fair value, whereas the underlying transactions are only recognized when they are realized. These timing differences result in short-term earning effects, which are neutralized over time. Second, financial result is impacted by realized losses from the sale of securities, while in the same period in 2015, we realized profits. The tax rate for the reconciliation of reported net income and adjusted net income stands now at 33% and 36% respectively. In H1, it was much lower. For the year as a whole, our outlook is significantly below 30%, which we can confirm from today's point of view. The reason for the higher tax rate in Q1 to Q3 is mainly due to aperiodic tax burdens caused by, among others, losses from the sale of securities, which are not tax deductible. This had a relative bigger impact on the low earnings in Q1 to Q3 than in H1 and for the expected full year 2016. The bridge from EBITDA to cash flows from operating activities is shown on slide 7. The reconciliation from EBITDA to FFO is explained by the net utilization of provisions of around 1 billion and cash effective tax and interest payments of around 1.1 billion. The negative change in working capital is largely driven by variation margins and the phasing out of the termination of some working capital measures. We decided to stop these measures on the back of economic considerations and our more comfortable liquidity situation. For the full year, we expect to see a strong improvement in the cash flow from operating activities compared to the low figure in Q3. This is mainly driven by a seasonally strong fourth quarter FFO, as well as an improvement in working capital. On slide 8, you can see the details of our net debt development. It increased by 2 billion euros since end of last year, mainly for two reasons. First, we had a negative cash balance. Second, we saw an increase in pension provisions. This was driven by lower discount rates in Germany, which came down to 1.3% from 2.4% at the end of last year. Corresponding figures for the UK pension provisions are 2.2% and 3.6% respectively. And especially the strong decline of the British pound compared to the euro led to an FX-induced improvement of our corresponding debt of approximately 1 billion. Net debt as of September 30th does not yet include the proceeds from the IPO of Innogy. On the one hand, this will improve net debt by approximately 4.6 billion. On the other hand, we will see an opposing effect from the risk premium on the nuclear provisions for intermediate and final storage, which we expect in total to be approximately 1.8 billion. Taking these aspects into account and assuming no further changes in discount rates for pension provisions, we now expect net debt for the end of the year to be in the order of 2015. In H1 2016, our outlook was moderately above the previous year. As previously mentioned, we can confirm our guidance for the group as a whole. Due to the positive earnings development we have seen so far in conventional power generation, we have upgraded our outlook for this division to in the order of 2015 from significantly below 2015. This is also the reason why, from today's standpoint, we expect to end the year at the upper end of the guidance corridor. As we will report Innogy's activities in one line in our annual report 2016 and thereafter, we have also adopted this reporting structure for the outlook. Innogy's operating result for 2015 amounted to 3.05 billion. We expected this year's operating result to be moderately below 2015. Let us now have a look at the most recent developments around the transfer of the nuclear waste disposal and storage provisions. Slide 10 provides the key facts from the draft law as published on October 19. I mentioned before that while it provides some clarity on the framework, it still lacks clarity on some key issues. First and most importantly, we need legal certainty for the future and are therefore looking to draw up a bilateral contract between the operators and the government. Second, the interfaces and conditions for the transfer of the waste and storage facilities have to be clearly defined. and thirdly, certain aspects of the payment, such as timing and interest charges on the provision and risk premium, need further clarification. We are in constructive discussions with the government on these points, and we hope to have final clarity from the legislative process soon. The main focus for RWE will be then to establish the best way to finance our portion of the liabilities. With this in mind, let us look at slide 11, which shows the current liquidity position of RWE standalone. After the placement of Innogy shares, we have ample liquidity on our balance sheet. However, not all can be used for financing purposes. First, there are some 3 to 3.5 billion in net financial assets not readily available to use. These include mainly financial receivables like collaterals, as well as funds which are earmarked to pay back all outstanding commercial papers of 1.8 billion. Second, there is committed credit line for Innogy of 1 billion in place in order to support Innogy's liquidity management until the end of 2018. And finally, we need approximately 2 to 3 billion of liquidity for our day-to-day business. Taking all this into consideration, there is currently approximately 5 to 6 billion free liquidity available. As part of our midterm planning, we will evaluate over the next few weeks the best way to fund the amount which the government has stipulated to be transferred to the external fund. After looking at the liquidity situation of RWE, you might also want to better understand our overall leverage situation on a standalone basis, so without Innogy being consolidated. Slide 12 shows our net debt adjusted for Innogy as of September 30. This number does not yet include the 2.6 billion proceeds from the Innogy placement, nor the risk premium on the nuclear provisions. It also still includes some debt which will be transferred to Innogy over the coming weeks and is backed by intercompany loans, thus not affecting our net debt position on a net basis. The 8.7 billion of net debt which remains at RWE is dominated by our long-term provisions for nuclear, mining and pensions. Our financial liabilities are actually more than covered by our financial assets, even without any consideration of our energy shareholding. To conclude my remarks today, let me give you a sneak preview on what we are working on at the moment. After presenting to you full year results, we plan to update you on our strategy and management agenda at the end of March. At the same time, we will give you an overview of the key financial performance indicators which we use to steer the company, as well as additional information on our operating divisions. Last but not least, we plan to provide a new and clear dividend policy. With this, we now enter the Q&A session. I'm curious about your questions and remarks, and I'm sure you're curious which question I'm able and willing to answer, being only 30 days in my new role.
Before we go to the Q&A, let me quickly introduce three new members to our IR team. Along with Burkhard and Martin, who you know already quite well, we have Sabine Gartmann, Lenka Sigmundova, and Jerome Herdemann in our team. You can find their contact details on our website. When starting a new job, as tempting as it is to rip up the rulebook and start afresh, it's also important that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Therefore, with this in mind, I'm going to be sticking with RWE's two questions rule in order to give everyone the chance for their questions. But you can, of course, also queue up for a second round. Operator, please.
Thank you. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. The first question is from Vincent Gilles, Credit Suisse.
Yeah, morning everyone. I got two questions, please. The first one would be, you were mentioning your expectation that the net debt, net economic debt, would be the same at the end of 16 as in the end of 15. What would be your pension provisions if you reflected now the recent change in bond yields? I know it's a bit difficult, but just to give us a feel for how much the debt could improve as the situation has clearly changed since the end of September. And the second question would be a bit of guidance on the working capital in the fourth quarter. It's always one of the important quarters here, and maybe we can understand a bit more where we will be in terms of cash flow by the end of the year. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Vincent. On the net debt question, the guidance is based only on the two major components, so the IPO proceeds and reflecting the risk premium of 1.8 billion also into the provisions, and we have assumed pension provisions to be stable. Of course, the recent increase in interest rate has a positive effect, but I mean, it's difficult to judge where we stand with our pension assets because it's a net basis. I mean, just to give you an indication, the 20 basis points would result on a gross basis into an improvement of around €500 million. And the second question on working capital, we expect the working capital to be the cash flow effect from the working capital changes in Q4 to be positive. So we expect a very strong cash flow as typically from our operations and a positive effect from working capital. But we also see cyclically higher investments in Q4. So overall, we expect a positive cash balance for Q4 standalone.
Thank you very much. But just to make sure I understood correctly, you said the €0.5 billion of delta on pension provision corresponded to how much in basis point?
20
basis point. Thank you very much.
But please keep in mind that's a gross view, right? Because we need the net.
Of course, yeah. It's very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Ahmed Farman, Jefferies.
Yeah, hi everyone. Thank you for taking my question. Just the first one on your divisional guidance for conventional power generation. Can you help us understand a little bit more how much of the improvement in guidance relates to one-off effects and how much is a result of improvement in underlying operational factors? And then the second one relates to the recent sort of rally in power prices. And I appreciate that dark spreads have not moved much outside of UK, and on the outright position, you're largely hedged. But wondering if you have started to see any earnings benefit as a result of higher spark spreads or more efficient optimization in the spot market, or is it just simply the case that even if power prices hold at current levels, for RWE, any material earning benefits, we're unlikely to see any earning benefit till 2019? Thank you.
Yeah. Ahmed, good morning, first of all. Let me start with your question regarding the division power generation. The improvement here, it's a mixed picture. We have, of course, one-off effects. We mentioned the sale of land in the UK, which was already reported in H1. This is a medium double-digit million number. And then the settlement with regard to the Hump power plant, which is new in Q3, that is a high double-digit million number, and the faster realization of efficiency improvements, that is it's around €100 million, and we see some margin improvement. That's also kind of an answer to your second question regarding power prices and the impact on our revenues. I mean, as you mentioned, the positions are largely hedged for 2017, we don't see huge effects there, but we do see some margin increases, especially in those markets which are tight and show more volatility, especially from the optimization result. Yeah, and to be clearly mentioned here is the UK.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Peter Crampton, Macquarie.
Good afternoon. Two questions, if I may. Firstly, you're talking about a revised dividend policy and just wondering if you can provide a bit more color on what a revised policy would look like, given that currently the dividend is suspended. And then secondly, based on your energy shareholding and the guidance we have from energy, we're looking at €600 to €700 million of energy dividends coming to RWE. And I was just wondering what kind of thoughts you have on how much this could be passed on to RWE shareholders. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. I will not give on our future dividend policy. That is too early because too many things are in flux. We need to know exactly what are the final terms and conditions on the nuclear deal we are currently in discussion with the government about. And the energy share, I mean, it's a combination. Dividend and energy, what we do with the energy dividend is related because the new RWE, when looking at it from a financial point of view, of course, we have communicated that we're going to keep 51% of energy, so it is one of our business segments fully consolidated. But on the other hand, it is also obvious that the energy shareholding as a financial asset is somewhat linked to our provisions. And now we need to figure out exactly how we, from a financial point of view, steer that. And when we have that figured out, after we have clarity on the nuclear side, then we can give you a clear guidance. I mean, maybe that reveals a little bit how we think about it. But I cannot be clearer now because first I want on clarity on some key cornerstones before I talk about it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Sam Arie, UBS.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. I have two, actually. The first is around the leverage, and I think I understood you saying that at the end of this year you expect the leverage to be in a similar place to where it was end of last year, so 25, 26 billion. Do you, and I think in the past we talked about a target for getting the leverage to four times or thereabouts below. Do you still have a target leverage? And relatedly, do you have a sort of target or an outlook for the credit rating? And then my second question is around the climate action plan that went through government this week, and if you could comment on the expected impact on the lignite assets in particular. Thank you.
Yeah. Good morning, Sam. I mean, on the leverage, yes, we said we're going to be at the end of the year, everything else being equal with the additional risk premium for the nuclear funding and the energy proceeds at around 25.5 billion. We have no kind of leverage target anymore for the fully consolidated figures. Your second question on the climate action plan, I mean, it's much too early. It's a kind of a pledge what the government intends to do. All the details will be worked out starting 2018, so after the next election in Germany. So it would be pure speculation.
Okay, thank you. Can I just quick follow up on the first part of that? So understood on the leverage target. How about on the credit rating? Can you comment on that briefly?
Yes. Oh, sorry, I missed that. I mean, the target is still the same. We want to keep our investment grade rating.
Is that okay, Sam?
Okay, yep, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Mark Lewis, Barclays.
Yes, good morning, everybody. I actually had a follow-up question to Sam's on the climate action plan. I appreciate that as the plan as we have it at the moment only contains targets but no real policy measures in terms of how those targets will be achieved, it is difficult for you to comment in detail. But I wonder if you could just give us your view, really, on how far emissions in the power sector would have to fall if this is confirmed after the next election. I mean, judging from the report, I haven't actually seen the final government report itself. I'm not sure it's even publicly available at the moment, but based on comments I've read on various different news sites, it looks like we're looking at a 55% reduction from current levels. So if the power sector is currently emitting about 315 million tonnes a year, that was the number in 2015, we'd be looking at going down to between 140 and 150 million tonnes by 2030. Would you agree with those numbers? And if so, how far away from your current base case scenario planning would that be, if that's not too difficult a question to answer?
No, it's not too difficult, Mark. I think the numbers were also in discussion within the government. I haven't seen the final confirmed numbers. I think they are slightly higher than what you mentioned. I think we need to wait maybe a couple of hours before they publish the final report. I think what is important also for us, that what has changed over the last couple of days is that they have also said clearly before they decide on very specific measures, they want an assessment of the consequences for all kind of stakeholders. So for the industrial base in Germany, for households, electricity prices, because somebody has to pay for it, and also for the affected regions. And I think this is very important, and they want to set up a commission which first looks into an assessment of the consequences and then proposes specific actions. Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Michelle Debs, Citigroup.
Good morning. I have two questions, please. The first one relates to plant closures. You have a slide at the back of your presentation showing capacity measures. And my question is fairly simple. There are a number of capacity closures that are earmarked for 2017, 2018. Could you give us a sense, either as a total number or a per megawatt number, of the cost savings you make on EBITDA and on maintenance CapEx when you close at capacity? And my second question relates to the dividend. I'm coming to that again, I'm sorry. I understand it's too early to give us a dividend policy or to tell us what you do with the money coming from energy. This is fine. But we just want to understand the way you think about this. Are you going to think about your dividend taking the balance sheet leverage and credit rating as the first consideration? Or will you think about dividend distribution as a function of cash flows irrespectively of the balance sheet? Which comes first, the cash generation or the balance sheet? And I know they're linked, but I would like to understand what you pay out of. Thank you.
Yeah. Michelle, thanks for the questions. I mean, the first one we don't answer. I mean, the capacity closures you see on slide 19 in the backup are also related to the security reserve. So we decommission, but we still have the plant ready. So there are some costs associated to that. And especially in the lignite area, it's a very complex interdependent system. So to really allocate some cost savings to specific measures is very difficult. So please, apologies, we can't be clearer on that one. The second one on dividend and what comes first. We need some time also to have our discussions with the rating agencies because, I mean, RWE is now kind of a strange animal because if you look at fully consolidated figures, that is not the economic truth of how we're going to steer the company. But on the other hand, the energy shares are not a pure financial asset, which are on a net debt basis not taken into consideration so far. I think we need this discussion first before I can tell you what are the kind of cornerstones of our future dividend policy. And in addition to that, the complexity is that, of course, cash flows for the dismantling and decommissioning of nuclear plants are something else, where we have the financial investment energy again, which are something else than operating cash flows. Yeah, so please give me the time to work that out with the team, and then we can provide you all the details when we discuss future policy when we meet next time.
Thank you for that. A quick follow-up, if I may. Does this mean that it is possible that you do not resume paying cash dividends out of RWE AG?
Sorry, can you ask that again? I think it's a hypothetical question, which is always difficult to answer.
It is, but my question is, given the fact that you do not have, at this point in time, all the elements that you need to build your own vision and your policy, does this mean that we have to keep in mind that possibly, if rating agencies are tough on you and if the timing of the nuclear decommissioning cash flows is adverse, you may not be able to resume a cash dividend payment in 2017 or 18? Is that a risk?
That's much too early to give an answer to that, yeah.
Thank you very much.
I don't want to speculate.
Thank you. Could we have the next question, please?
Thank you. The next question is from Deepa Venkateswaran, Bernstein.
Thank you. I have just one question. So if I look at Exhibit or Chart 11, where you talk about the liquidity that is available, I understand that you've taken off around $1 billion for providing energy with some credit. Is it fair to also assume that if you needed to pay the government, you would then avail this $2.5 billion credit line in order to meet this $6.8 billion, and that you don't need to sell any energy shares in the next 6 to 9 months for that?
Yeah, Deep, thanks for the question and hello. I mean, first statement, the energy credit line is, we provide this committed credit line until the end of 2018. This was part of the agreement when we split the liquidity between energy and RWE, because we have kept most of the liquidity on RWE level, knowing that we need to fund the nuclear fund. And in order to give energy some time to build their own access to debt markets, we have provided this interim liquidity line. That is the background to the $1 billion committed line until 2018. And, I mean, speculation whether we're going to use a 2.5 syndicated credit line, I think it's a wrong speculation. These are usually backup liquidity lines for either commercial paper or operational liquidity to fund very, I mean, an ongoing funding requirement with short-term liquidity, it is difficult. But on the other hand, if you see on page 11 that we have around 5.6 billion and it's maybe another 12 months until we're going to pay, it is not a situation where we need to be concerned about anything. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from James Sparrow, BNP Paribas.
Yes, hi everyone. I've just got a couple of questions on the credit side, if I could. First of all, going back to the issue of the rating, the agency's made a few noises around the energy rating, which obviously the restructuring has been positive for them, potentially negative for RWE. Just interested to hear your thoughts on how important an investment grade rating is, given the abundant liquidity you have, and if you were to go sub-investment grade, whether that would have any practical impact. And then the second question is regarding hybrids. You've obviously inherited a large portfolio of corporate hybrids. Just wondered if you could give us any sort of indication of how you think about their role within your capital structure. I appreciate there are things you can't say because of rating agency methodology, but I just wondered whether you can give any indication of what you think would be the ideal portion of hybrid debt within the balance sheet. Thank you.
Thank you, James, and hello. I mean, let's start with the easy part. So first, unfortunately, I cannot give you any indication on the hybrids. We will take the decision regarding the first hybrid when we have to take it. So that's also too early. I want to understand all the implications from the funding, from the discussion with the rating agency before we take any decision on the structuring of our liability side. On credit rating, there was maybe some noise, but let's start with the positive news first. Both Fitch and Moody's have reaffirmed the rating of RWE and expect the decision from Standard & Poor's within the next weeks. Then we're going to have a discussion with them in winter and early spring, and then we know how they think about it. We have our own thoughts on how you look on the credit side of RWE, and I think I have given you some indications on that, and I thought, I mean, of course, the energy shareholdings are in a way linked to our provisions.
Okay, thanks. No, I appreciate that. Maybe if I could just follow up on just a point of clarity then, maybe. On slide 12, when you're talking about the debt and the debt not yet pushed down to energy, can you confirm that you're not talking about hybrids there? Thanks.
Yes. We not. I mean, the hybrids as hybrids will stay on the RWE balance sheet. Yeah?
The same that are mainly the private placement and the EIB loan we are talking about here.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Alberto Gandolfi, Goldman Sachs.
Yes, hi, good morning. I have two on my side as well. The first one is on conventional power generation. Could you help us out navigate through the 2017 drivers? I mean, we know your power prices have done roughly €5 per megawatt hour. UK spreads are doing better. There's a fuel tax. There's the beginning of a capacity payment. So could you narrow us down where you see that business evolving? I understand you can't give a guidance, but at least the trend, the trajectory, let's say, of a CPG with maybe a little bit of a basis for it. And the other one is that for you're getting at the top end of your range for this year. If I just simply look at Bloomberg consensus, analysts are just over €500 million. You're getting for about 700. So 17 consensus is about 670 million. So would you still be comfortable with 2017 numbers in consensus where they are? Thank you.
Alberto, good morning. I will not comment on what I think about the consensus 2017. And on conventional power generation, please keep in mind, and we'll also reveal that information, that if you look at the average hedge price, it was around €35 in 16 and €30 in 17. So a €5 delta on an outright position, which is around 90 to 100 terawatt hours. You need lots of measures to offset that. Yeah. That gives you a directional answer to your question where we see that result of the division conventional power generation going in 2017.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Nick Ashworth, Morgan Stanley.
Hi, morning, everybody. Firstly, you talked a little bit about efficiency gains across the business. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on the ongoing program then? Is that still the legacy program from RWE, or is there anything new that's been implemented there? And then secondly, in terms of CapEx, if there's any change of guidance for this year, but aside from that also, how are you thinking about CapEx in the medium term? Are there any areas of growth that you would like to be looking at? So could cash flow be diverted, or some cash flow be diverted to growth CapEx in time? How are you thinking about that at the moment?
Hi, Nick. Your first question on efficiency gains, I mean, all the efficiency gains where we said we realized that faster than originally planned were from the old program. We will give you a full update what we intend to do in future years in the Capital Markets Day in March next year. So these were not yet new programs. And on CapEx, I mean, let's talk about the operational business of RWE, so conventional power generation and trading. There, we currently don't have any plans other than day-to-day CapEx.
And in terms of this year, there's no change to guidance already set out? Or
no.
Numbers you'd already put out? Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Andrew Moulder, CreditSights.
Yes, hi. I've just got a couple of questions, really. I mean, one is, I'm sure it's a stupid question, but when I look at your slide seven and you show the EBITDA to cash flow for RWE, you've got cash flow from operations of 0.6 billion. If I look at the Innogy presentation from 2 days ago, they have a cash flow from operations of 1.7 billion. Now, I'm not sure that I'm 100% clear on the accounting here, but if 1.7 billion is coming from Innogy and you're fully consolidating Innogy in RWE's figures, does that mean that you've really got about a negative cash flow from operations of over 1 billion in the RWE operations? That's my first question. And my second question, I just want to understand a little bit about your hybrid treatment. I did hear the answer that you gave to James a minute ago, but RWE had previously said that they would sort of treat hybrid bondholders in a responsible way and possibly in a sort of an investor-friendly way. Is that still the intention at RWE? Thank you.
Andrew, thanks. I mean, the easy part, yes, that is still our intention, our hybrid holders in a reasonable way. And on your Innogy, the delta of Innogy's results, I mean, we have two effects here. I mean, the first one is the utilization of provisions, which is much higher at RWE standalone. And then part of the cash flow from operations is also the working capital movement, where the negative effect was on the RWE standalone side. And then please keep in mind that we have a much higher financial, no, much higher negative financial result RWE level than on Innogy. So the additional funding and requirements for RWE are still a delta between Innogy's cash flow of operations and ours.
Okay, I'm still not 100% clear. Just to be maybe 100% clear, the 0.6 billion that RWE is showing includes the full 1.7 billion that Innogy has shown.
You mean the first? You mean the first one, the 0.6. Yes, that fully includes Innogy's cash flow from operating activities. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. At the moment, there are no further questions. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. The next question is from Vincent Gill, Credit Suisse.
Yes, hi again. Follow-up question on trading. We spent a lot of time on conventional generation, your second leg. Can you explain to us the swing versus last year of your trading earnings? I understand, obviously, the guidance for the full year is according to what happened in the first 9 months, but if you could help us get a feeling for what a sustainable, whatever that means, number could be, would be very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, Vincent, please to answer the question. I mean, the losses were already explained in the last call by Bernard, because the losses we suffered from all happened in Q2. So in Q3 we had an operating result which was in line with expectation, which was slightly above 50 million euros. And that is also an indication of what we on average expect from the segment. It is around 200 million operating result a year. But of course it is the most volatile business we have in our portfolio. Does that answer your question?
Asan?
Yes, it does. Sorry, I pressed mute. Sorry.
Oh, no. Okay. No problem.
Thank you. The next question is from Sam Arie, UBS.
Also mute.
Sam.
Oh, yes, thank you. Just one more question from my side, and I'm coming back, I'm afraid, again to the dividend question, although I understand what you're able to say today. Can you just comment for us on the municipal shareholders? Because I suppose one of the thoughts ahead of the IPO was that some of those shareholders might rotate their holdings out of RWE and into Innogy. On the screens, it looks like that hasn't really happened yet, although I think we can't quite see the municipal shareholdings exactly. They're pooled in RWE GmbH, if I'm right. So can you just tell us if there's been any movement in the municipal shareholdings or if you have any expectations around that? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it was never the plan that the municipality shareholders become shareholders of Innogy. I'm not aware of any plan of them to invest into Innogy. Yet, some of them have decided to sell their RWE shares, and I think partly also executed already. I think that's the situation on that side.
And so would we see that? I think the RWE GmbH holding is about 15%. If municipalities had sold down their shares, would we see that 15% change, or would it not be visible to us?
It will be below 15%.
So, Sam, they actually went already below 15%.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, there was a notice to us that they went already below 15%.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Richard Alderman, Macquarie Securities.
Hi. Sorry to come back to the dividend question one more time, but I'm maybe just not understanding quite what you're saying. I understand you need to speak to the rating agencies with regard to the way that you'll treat your energy holding and that aspect against future provisions. And also I understand that you need to get a clearer understanding of where your cash flow will be. But you've talked about actually having a revised dividend policy, but at the same time you answered a question on whether you may or may not pay a cash dividend next year with saying it's too early to say. Can you just clarify whether you actually do believe you'll have a dividend policy, or why would you put it into the slides? And more specifically, are you actually saying that in effect, in the answer to that last question on cash dividends, that it's more likely to be set by a view of cash cover of the dividend going forward? Thank you.
I mean, of course, we currently have suspended the dividend. There was an old dividend policy in place, which was, given the situation we were in, not so clear. It had a lot of aspects mentioned. I mean, we are striving to provide you with a clear dividend framework and policy in spring next year, that you have a much better expectation of what dividend we will pay given the earnings development. Whether that is linked to earnings or cash flow, we need some time to figure that out. I mean, especially given the situation that following the nuclear funding solution, we are in a situation where we see huge cash flows, negative cash flows from the dismantling and decommissioning, compared to the which are very high compared to the underlying business, how we treat that cash flow in our dividend policy.
But at the same time, you've just confirmed that you have no significant growth capex to spend, that working capital will adjust.
Yes.
And that even though your hedging is €5 less, obviously, if you look at the cash flows from energy dividends, that should provide rating agencies with some comfort here. So I'm just trying to grapple with the idea of why you've said there's a revised dividend policy wherein it's currently zero, and you don't seem to indicate whether you can have one at all.
I mean, I do understand, and I also support what you were saying about how it would look from a credit point of view at our figures, but we need to discuss that. I mean, talking about a new and clear dividend policy, what we meant by that is that we don't want this mixed bag of policy, but a much clearer one, where it's much easier for you to form your expectations and not so much speculation. But please accept that I cannot speculate now whether we pay 2017 a dividend or not.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from James Sparrow, PNB Paribas.
Yeah, hi. It's just another follow-up question on the credit side, really. And again, just trying to understand, you know, to what extent is a credit rating important to Innogy's business going forward? And say, if you were to end up sub-investment grade, would that matter? What impact would it have actually on your day-to-day business for Innogy? Thanks.
I mean, given that we want to separate the company and we have also set it up fully separated already, and knowing you also know Innogy's business plan and we know our financials, I actually don't see the huge risk that Innogy drops below investment grade. I mean, not at all. That is, I think you can never rule something out, but I don't see a situation where Innogy would drop to non-investment grade.
But if it were to be the case, I mean, would there be an impact on your trading business? I mean, presumably it's a contingency you must be considering. You're on two negative outlooks.
But I think we have dealt with the situation before when we were much closer to a potential downgrade. I think the situation has, from our standpoint, with the successful Innogy IPO and having Innogy stakes available, has significantly improved. And I mean, now revisiting the old contingency plan, of course we would survive, including the entire trading and hedging business also as a non-investment sector.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The last question is from Andrew Mulder, CreditSights.
Yes, hi. Probably not often you get credit investors asking about the dividend, but I just want to understand perhaps a little bit. Is there any sense that the dividend that RWE pays might actually be a direct consequence of the dividend that Innogy pays up to RWE? And, you know, and you might just use that dividend that Innogy pays up to you to pay perhaps the hybrid coupons and the dividend to RWE shareholders. Is that something that you're thinking about?
That depends on two aspects. First one is what is the cash flow or the cash balance of the operating businesses of RWE? And the second one is how do we financially steer the company in future? So how do we link energy shareholdings and energy dividends to our provisions and especially the much faster utilization of our provisions now? Yeah. I mean, you can now, that's now speculation. You could look at it and say, we're not going to sell energy, we want to keep it. Then, of course, we need funds for the utilization of provisions. If you start reducing your financial asset energy, you can also from that proceeds pay the utilization of provisions. I mean, we need to figure out how we're going to balance that in future. And you are all right, asking exactly the right question. We have exactly the same questions here on the table and need more time than just 30 days to figure it out. We're going to do it.
And we'll get all this information, I guess, in March. Is that the intention?
In all detail, yes.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. We just received one last question. The last question is from Benoit de la Rossière, Allianz.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my question. I'm back, I'm afraid, on hybrids, and I know you don't want to answer a certain number of questions on that topic because it's not clear now for you, but would it be possible, could we imagine that you would call the non-call 17 hybrids, so coming soon, and replace them at energy level, for example? Would it be possible? And I want to know there if it's possible to, would you be ready to sell some energy stake, not because you have some cash outflows to fund or refinancing of debt, for example, but if you had to protect your rating, IG rating. Thank you very much.
There were no plans when we split the companies and discussed liquidity and also capital structure on RWE and Innogy side. There were no plans to move hybrids to energy. And on the other two questions on speculation, whether we call what we do with energy shares, I don't want to comment at this moment.
Thank you. We have some further questions. The next question is from Alberto Gandolfi, Goldman Sachs.
Yes, hi. Apologies for the follow-up. Just to be clear, I mean, when you talk about the upper end of your guidance and you talk about the 3.1 billion EBIT, for instance, and you still talk about the 700 million for the underlying net income. I mean, if I look at the financial result you just reported, even if we talk about a significantly below 30% tax rate, I mean, the 700 million maybe looks more challenging than the 3.1 billion EBIT, let me say. And so I was wondering, could you maybe tell us what type of non-recurring items you have really in the financial expenses for the 9 months 16? Or, you know, maybe there's something in the minority lines that we're not thinking about, but if you can help us navigate a little bit between EBIT and net income, because the 3.1 personally might look a little bit, you know, doable, but 700 million a bit more challenging. Thank you.
Thanks, Alberto. I mean, for us, the 700 million do not look more challenging. It all adds pretty much up. So there's no additional stretch or something on the adjusted net income side. The financial result is fully reflected in the adjusted net income, and we have suffered some losses from the sale of financial assets and securities in the financial result. So the financial result in the fourth quarter is lower than three-quarters of our existing financial result. That might explain the difference.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Andrew Moller, CreditSight.
Sorry. Third question. I promise this is the last one I'm going to ask. On the hybrid bonds, I know you've asked a lot of questions about them. I just want to be clear. Do you know or have you had approval from the rating agencies that the equity that was issued at Innogy could be seen as a replacement for the equity content of the 2017 hybrid if you decide to call and not replace it with another hybrid bond?
Andrew, we are in discussions with the rating agencies regarding this topic.
But you haven't had a positive or negative answer either way?
We are in discussions, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions. I hand back to the speakers.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your many questions today. As always, the IR team is still at your disposal this afternoon. I hope to see you soon somewhere in London or here in Essen. Bye.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may now disconnect.